Welcome to Soundprint. I'm Lisa Simeone. Since the virus that causes AIDS, HIV, or human immunodeficiency virus, was identified in the 1980s, fear of the unknown has given way to understanding, to scientific breakthroughs, to effective medicines. And many of us have discovered that we know people living with HIV, or people who've died from AIDS. I've spent much of my life working in the arts, and I know a lot of these people. I've watched friends sicken and fade and die. I've held their hands. I've gone to their funerals. But I've also laughed and joked and clinked champagne glasses with them. I've toasted yet another year gone by where they experienced no worse consequences, no signs of ill health. It's astounding how far we've come. There's so much medical research going on in this country, and so many successes, that we might forget that not everyone can afford health care, especially people who are HIV positive, and especially in countries that aren't so well off, like South Africa. There, research is going on all the time, in public clinics, where people come for treatment, for prevention, and for information. Today's Soundprint, produced by Gemma Hooley for our series The World of Viruses, is called The Clinic.
Don't worry. I'm going to have a cup of tea, though. Would you like one?
I'm fine.
Because I haven't actually done... I forgot to do lunch before you came. No, that's all right. No.
Linda Gail Becker is a woman in a rush. She's a public health physician with a background in tuberculosis. With around 18% of South Africans living with HIV and roughly 80%, that's 80, exposed to TB by the time they're 35, Becker cannot afford to slow down.
Food doesn't feature too highly, thank goodness. Not someone who has to eat. Sleep I need to do now and then, but eat. Good.
Becca runs the non-profit Desmond Tutu HIV Foundation, based in the city of Cape Town.
We are a research-based organization, so nothing we do does not go without the question, could we have done it better? How much did it cost? Did we make the impact we thought we would? Why didn't we if we didn't? And the idea is really to develop prototypes or models, which can then be passed on to others who are service deliverers. Hopefully government being our main partner to say, look, here is a model. We think it works. This is how much it'll cost you. Roll it out. And then we've been fairly successful to date.
Today, Becca is traveling to a local public health clinic in the township of Inyanga to meet with nurses about an ambitious plan she hopes to pilot there.
I really think TB and HIV requires us to go out of the facility and into the community to really try and intervene and break the transmission patterns.
So a first step is to get patients to understand the stages of their disease by giving them individual report cards.
So we've designed this thing called a Road to HIV Health Card, and we're testing to see whether these patients will actually carry the card and use it and empower themselves with it. And this clinic will be our model place for testing this. So, we're excited about it.
The clinic is on a potholed street circled with a security fence and barbed wire. At the front desk, the guard offers us a clipboard with a pen on a string. Behind him, on the wall, a sign reads "No guns."
Hello. Thank you. I'll sign for both of us, okay? Thank you. Molweni, molweni. So we're also trying to give the clinics a bit of a boost. So we painted the outside of it, found some money and painted the outside of it. Now I want to paint the inside, but the roof also needs some repair. So I'm raising money at the moment to fix the roof. Principle being that people work well if they enjoy where they work, you know, so that's what we're trying to test. Hi. Hello. This is us. Is this all of us?
In his light-filled office at the University of Cape Town, Robin Wood reels off the dark toll of South Africa's HIV/AIDS epidemic. He speaks these numbers with a doctor's calm.
We actually have an estimated 5.7 million people infected with HIV, which is pretty horrendous, which means close to 1 in 5 of the population are infected with HIV.
Wood is a professor of medicine in the university's infectious diseases unit. He's been working to get HIV therapy into South African townships since the early 1990s and studying why the virus is so prevalent here.
Is it because of transport routes? Is it because of migrant labor? Is it because of the lack of circumcision or the use of circumcision? So they're very complex. Are there cofactors which are driving this epidemic? But certainly for South Africa and the surrounding countries, the burden of disease appears to have been higher than any other country in sub-Saharan Africa.
Wood heads up the Desmond Tutu HIV Center here at the university. When the government rolled out its HIV therapy program in 2004, the center was poised to partner with public health clinics on research, testing, and treatment. They also built a team of community counselors, and Nobafundi Dondolo stepped forward.
My name is Nobafundi Dondolo. After I was diagnosed with HIV/AIDS, the only thing I thought about it was how to live or deal with this, because I was afraid of dying. At that time, I was thinking, really, God, I don't want to die.
In 1998, when Dondolo was diagnosed, HIV/AIDS was still a mystery to most South Africans and a death sentence. Dondolo's fiancé was already sick, but she didn't understand yet what this meant for her.
He was sick, he was dying of AIDS, and then his doctor advised me to go for a test. I went for the test, and I had an 11-month-old baby then. I was just thinking before I went for the test, oh God, I wish I can be negative. But the results came that was HIV positive. I was also infected.
There was no public health therapy for HIV in South Africa back then. It fell to Dondolo to care for her fiancé, who'd been sent home from the hospital to die.
So it was not easy for me. But I was not feeling any pain. The only pain I was feeling, because I could see he was suffering. He was very sick. And then I just decided that I need to give him this support until he dies.
Dondolo looks down at her small hands as she speaks. For years, she attended workshops and support groups in her community. Anything she could do to help herself. Now she's a counselor here at the Tutu Center. She sits with HIV patients while they're waiting for the doctor and talks to them about taking their antiretroviral meds, or ARVs.
We want to hear all the stories. And they will tell you that, yeah, I don't have to take the ARVs anymore because my church is telling me that I'm going to be healed. God is going to heal me. So those things, they contribute to the people failing their treatment.
Getting into a treatment program is a numbers game. When you test positive for HIV, you're given your CD4 count. Imagine your body's T cells, the building blocks of your immune system. Some have a protein on their surface called CD4. HIV hijacks this protein for a ride into the T cells. When most healthcare professionals talk about these cells, they use a shorthand. They call them CD4 cells. Dondolo explains all this to patients at the clinic.
What happened to the CD4 cell after that? The CD4 cell bursts because there's a lot of viruses inside it. What happened to the CD4 cell? It dies. And what happened to the viruses that are produced? They spread all over the bloodstream and target more CD4 cells. That's why you see your CD4 cells, it's going down. At that time, the virus, it's growing.
So a low CD4 count indicates a low number of T cells available to help fight disease. The CD4 count becomes a key benchmark for when to start taking antiretroviral meds. In South Africa, a count of 350 is the threshold if you're HIV positive and pregnant, under a year old, or infected with both HIV and tuberculosis. It's 200 for most everyone else. But the average count of people coming into programs, says Robin Wood, is only around 100.
So what we're doing is we're seeing the sickest patients that have a probably 50% or greater risk of dying in the next 12 months, and we are rescuing them with therapy. The problem is that burdens of disease have, especially TB, have increased considerably. And the question is, can we use antiretroviral therapy upstream to prevent this burden of disease, or are we doomed just to be catching the people falling over the waterfall? What do we do to go upstream to stop disease progression?
How's everyone? Good, good, good. Nice to see you.
About a dozen nurses and community counsellors wait for Linda Gale Becker around a table in a sparse meeting room at the Nyanga Clinic. She passes around some copies of the trifold card, about the size of a passport.
So the idea is the card folds into this size and goes into a black sheet. But the idea, what we will ask the patients to do, is carry this every time they come to the clinic. And you can write on this anything you think is relevant. So if something happens here, they start TB treatment, you could put an arrow saying TB treatment. When the ARVs start, when the ARVs end, are they on Bactrim? Any other bits of info. The idea is then if this person gets run over by a bus and turns up at GF Uster, GF Uster has a card with details. Oh, he's on Nevirapine 3TC and AZT, let's start the Nevirapine 3TC and AZT straight away.
As Becker talks, she uses multicolored pens on a flip chart to demonstrate the columns on the card. CD4 count, HIV viral load, TB test.
When they hit the red zone, they start treatment. They know I've got to ask for treatment. When I'm in the amber zone, I'm getting near to treatment. I need to start thinking about treatment.
The nurses and counselors in the room are silent for the most part, thinking through what this card will mean for them and the patients in their care.
Are you guys on board? You think so? You're willing to work with us on this? Okay. I am very excited, as you can hear. I think we can revolutionize the care we're giving here by doing this. But it's challenging.
One of the nurses raises her hand with a question for Becker, or LGB, as everyone calls her.
LGB, the viral load column. Mm.
Is confusing. It sticks a lot of people. So on this side, and we can lose it, but on this side we had the viral load concept. And really the most important thing there is, say you've been on treatment for a long time already and your CD4s now is running in the 600s because you've been on treatment for a long time and you're feeling very well. Patients get very excited that their virus is undetectable. They want to know their CD4's up, but they also want to know their virus is undetectable. So it's quite nice to record it somewhere.
The viral load indicates how active the virus is in the body. The load can be high, even if CD4 cells are still plentiful.
But we could definitely look at how to describe that better, a little bit less technical. You're not alone on that. That's been raised a few times. Any other comments, anyone? Have we got a go?
I say convincingly so.
This is just the beginning. Becker and her team will work on fine-tuning the card and return in a few weeks. As we leave the clinic, the scene around us is typical of weekday afternoons. Every bench in every hallway is packed with people waiting for care.
This is the ultimate bottleneck, the pharmacy. It's always the congestion happens.
Not everyone can get to a clinic, so Becker's team has kitted out an RV-type van to take the clinic to the streets. On this day, the Tutu Tester is parked on a shady traffic island in downtown Cape Town.
You want us to put it up now?
Testing is done inside the vehicle. Then counselors talk with patients in one of the plastic tents set up outside. This means that before the nurses can get out their stethoscopes, they have to get busy with mallets and tent pegs.
Okay, here we go. We just have to secure it to the trees.
To allay the stigma of standing in line for HIV testing, the clinic offers three tests: blood pressure, diabetes, and HIV. Five or six people have stopped to find out more, and a counselor starts to walk them through their sex education ABCs.
But what is important is to know how to open a condom and then how to put it in. Every time you use two hands, now sex is different. It's no more rush and go. It's taking your time because of this is about your life, okay? So see the way you open it and you shake it. There you are.
It's more than just education. It's a way to encourage people to step forward for testing. One man has been asking lots of questions about sexually transmitted diseases and condom use. Now he announces quietly that he's made a decision.
I don't know what, if I see the girl that I slept with a year ago, what I will say to her when I see her about this. But maybe I should encourage people to go and test for HIV. I think that would be a wise thing to do, and I think I should do it myself now.
The patient, a man named Vusi, goes through the registration process. The enormity of what he's about to find out starts with the most mundane information. Weight, height, first initial of his first name, and a fingerprint.
We store all your data on the computer with your fingerprint. Okay? That's your form. You can just take a seat, and the nurses will call you when it's your turn.
After a few minutes, nurse Liz Tebus leans out of the vehicle and beckons Vusi inside. He tells her he's nervous and worried that he's put on weight.
So, but while your blood pressure has been done, okay, just relax now, no? I'm going to see if the scale added 2 kilograms.
It's nervous. It's not easy. As I said, it's not an easy thing to do.
Getting out of hand, you must just relax now.
Oh, my God, okay.
Just relax. No.
What's going on?
I don't know. I think you're a bit too anxious.
No?
Yes. It's beating too fast. It is beating very fast.
It's just...
Why is that stress? Okay. Let's first do this and get it out of the way. And then I'll check your blood pressure again. Because maybe once you've settled, you've received, and you've heard that this...
How do you see that?
Yeah, I can see your pulse rate is 132. And I can feel it bounding.
So Tebus decides to do the HIV test first. As she goes to get a fresh pair of blue latex gloves, Vusi fans his face and tries to catch his breath.
Okay, so here we go. No fainting. That's it. Okay. Just turn over. Now I just want you to press with the cotton wool.
It's just a finger prick, then a drop of blood on a test strip. The result will take several minutes to appear. Tebus quizzes Vusi while we wait.
I need to ask some questions, ne? So when did you test? When was your last test for HIV?
When I did this, when was it? Was it 2007, 8?
And that was negative. Your blood pressure was also fine. Your sugar was fine at the time. Have you ever had an STD?
Yes, I did. That was 2008 also.
Okay. Then tell me, at present, you say you're picking up weight. You're not sweating a lot at night.
Not at all.
Even if it's cold.
I don't sweat.
Okay.
In the tiny testing room, Vusi has gone very quiet. He barely responds when Tebus gives him the all clear on TB and diabetes.
You eat fruit, vegetables, berries every day?
Yes, I eat berries too.
Yes. According to this risk assessment form, you have very, very little chance of developing diabetes in the next 10 years, okay?
Then comes the result Vusi has been waiting to hear.
And... according to this, you seem to be HIV negative. Now let that sink in. You have no HIV. You understand, Booty? Okay. Okay.
I am doing this. I'm emotional, I'm sorry.
Vusi has thrown his arms around Tebus. His head is buried in her neck. He's shaking, crying silently, and hugging her tight.
You know what I did? I was strong. I prayed to God. I prayed to my ancestors. I believe in ancestors. I'm a sexually active person. I won't lie to you. Yes, sometimes I get promiscuous, but carefully. I have one partner now. But no, I'm happy. At least this is my second chance. I hope next time I'll be... brave again like this, what I did.
Vusi steps outside and heads to the counselor's tent, where Flora Inobo is waiting to talk with him.
Have you had more than one sexual partner in the past 3 months?
Yes.
Okay. Did you have sex with someone for food, for money, for clothes, for...
I will never do that.
never sell sex.
I will never. As long as I'm still working for myself, still can do things, I will never.
Okay, you've got 6/8. That is very high risk. Eh? Now that you tested HIV negative today, how are you planning to remain negative?
You know what? I said something to myself while I was sitting. I said to myself, God, this is not a child's play. I really need to take a step and then put my foot down and say, condom, condom, condom. At least now I'm so relieved. You don't understand. No.
While there is some evidence that an HIV vaccine might one day be possible, other prevention pathways are opening up right now. Linda Gail Becker says South Africa cannot afford to stop looking.
There is an overwhelming sense that unless we turn off the tap and unless we reduce incidence, unless we have fewer people getting infected, we really are, you know, going to find it increasingly difficult to, one, just carry out the logistics required to get these numbers of people on treatment and keep them on treatment. But secondly, the budget involved is just overwhelming, and clearly it needs to be done. But in order to stay ahead, we really do need to find prevention opportunities in this country.
Becker was the lead South African investigator on a global study sponsored by the US National Institutes of Health. The researchers wanted to know if antiretrovirals can prevent HIV in patients who are not yet infected. They worked with men who have sex with men, and the results showed the risk of infection reduced by almost 44%.
So you take your oral pill every day to stop yourself getting HIV. And so we're delighted to be part of that study. I think that has enormous biological plausibility.
Becker was also at the 2010 International AIDS Conference in Vienna when one announcement was met with a standing ovation.
Today we celebrate the proof of concept of microbicides.
In a groundbreaking clinical trial in South Africa, a vaginal gel containing an antiretroviral drug was 39% effective in reducing HIV infection in women.
There's no question we learn the most from the human experiment. So my task as a clinical trialist, it's how do we do this in the safest possible way so community understands what they're involving themselves in, that there's no question of exploitation or, you know, experimentation. Many of the communities are grappling with day-to-day survival.
Masipumaleli Township outside Cape Town is built on swampland near the Atlantic Ocean. The township is ringed by a concrete wall, and within it live 13,000 people, many of them in shacks. Mfundo Galata is a youth counselor here.
This is an extreme informal settlement right here, where people, they don't own this land here.
As Galata talks, he gestures to the rows of portable toilets that are set up on a small rise. Their contents flow into a swampy area, on which are built hundreds of shacks, pieced together from cardboard and scrap metal.
And then if you look directly just behind this container here, there's toilets there. There's 1, 2, 3, 4 toilets. Those toilets are meant to accommodate, like I said, 20 to 25 people each, which is extremely freaked out and impossible.
Cramped, flooded living conditions like the ones in this section of Masipumaleli make this a petri dish for diseases like HIV and TB. The lone clinic here provides treatment.
Unfortunately, the community sees the clinic as whoever enters the clinic, that person must be sick from HIV. So whenever people come in from the gate, obviously they will be assumed that no, that person is sick.
That assumption makes it tough to recruit participants for clinical trials. Dr. Helen Woolgar is coordinating a microbicide study here among HIV-negative women.
To recruit a community where treatment is concerned is not as difficult as to recruit somebody who's for a prevention study. Being if you're going to be recruiting for a treatment study, the people are ill. So they are in need and in want of you giving them care. However, on a prevention study, because they are healthy and they don't actually need to be on the study, it is more difficult to recruit or even to retain them.
For me, it's a little bit like banking. You know, you have your short-term savings, you put your money where, you know, and go for what you can. And that's clearly, we've got to keep pushing the condoms, reduce partners. That's the short-term investment. The medium-term investment is, will pre-exposure prophylaxis work? Will microbicides work? That's kind of the middle term. And then the long term, which we've all got to continue to invest in because that's for our retirement, if you like, is the vaccine. And, you know, you ask me, do you do one or the other? I say you have to do all of them, and we've got to move them forward at the same time.
After I was diagnosed in 1998, at that time I had to wait until my baby's 18 months. I was like crying. I was praying God that, God, I'm just praying for this child to be negative. I'm going to be strong if my child is not infected.
And you must remember that day when you got that news.
No, I remember. I was working at that time because his father passed away. So I was working in the supermarket. My fiance's aunt said that I'm the one who's going there to fetch the results from Red Cross. She took the baby and went there. I was like, if the child is positive, I'm going to accept that. If the child is negative, I'm going to be very happy. And then she said, oh, God is great. The child is not infected. The child is safe. I was like sitting like, oh, my child is safe. You know, I felt that day was too long for me to go home and sit with my baby and look at my baby, that who my baby is safe, is not infected.
The Clinic, HIV in South Africa, was produced by Gemma Hooley and mixed by Jared Weisbrot. Special thanks to Chris Nelson for engineering assistance. This program is part of the series World of Viruses, produced with support from SEPA, the Science Education Partnership Award Program at NIH, the National Center for Research Resources, in collaboration with NET Radio, the Nebraska Center for Virology, and the University of Nebraska. If you missed part of this program, or if you'd like to hear it again, you can find it on our website, soundprint.org. We have links there to the other shows in the World of Viruses series and to lots more online reading. The address again is soundprint.org. Soundprint episodes are available for purchase on CD. Just give us a call at 1-888-38-TAPES and we'll send you your favorite episodes. Soundprint is produced by the Soundprint Media Center in association with WAMU and American University. Got a comment, question, or a deeply held grievance? Get it off your chest. You can contact us via email. The address is talkback@soundprint.org. Soundprint is production assistant Nkechi Mogekwu and audio engineer Jared Weisbrot. Our executive producer is Moira Rankin. I'm Lisa Simeone.